Usually when presidents of the United States or governors of sovereign states start a new job, they set as a goal, what are we going to do in the first 100 days? Well, the new superintendent of the Indianapolis Public Schools has set a goal of what things he wants to do between now and February the 28th. That's 100 days, maybe less school vacations. And I think he's going to be working during the intersession because I didn't realize next week and the week after is fall intersession. So he's really going to be working. He's the new superintendent of IPS, the pride of Durham, now here in Indianapolis, Dr. Louis Farabee. Welcome.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you having me today.
So, you're finally here. You've been, I got to first ask you, when you were riding the school bus on your first day on the job, what was the reaction of the kids when they walked on the bus in some kind of suit?
They were very excited. What's interesting about it, I believe somebody tipped them off because we went to one bus stop. And I tell you, it was a perfect line. I mean, they were saluting, they were waiting on me. And I said, this can't be the case every morning. And the bus driver said, well, there's a leader for each bus stop. Mm. And the leader is responsible for ensuring that everybody stays in line, is prepared when the bus comes. So I was impressed by our students. And we just had an opportunity to chat on the ride and just talk about their teachers, their school day, and of course, they wanted to know a lot about me.
What's been your initial impression? I know you've been to a bunch of schools, you've met teachers, you've met your administrative team, you've met a number of principals. What's been your impression?
My impression has been very positive thus far in terms of the teachers' commitment to ensuring that our students have the best. Obviously, there's more work to do. I have very high expectations of myself and the staff. So, you know, it will be a matter of rising to those expectations. In terms of curriculum, I've seen some good things, but I've also seen some areas that we may want to tweak. One thing that I've been really impressed with thus far is Super Kids, which is a new curriculum we've recently adopted in literacy in our elementary grades. And it's very easy for teachers to follow, and it provides teachers with the curriculum and the content they need to, you know, enhance students' literacy skills. But again, you know, there's some tweaks that I've seen as well that may be needed in instructional programs. So, but I'll need more time in our schools to make, you know, more official recommendations.
You have put together a plan. It's on the IPS website. You call it your entry plan. It's kind of like your blueprint for these next 100 days. What is that blueprint? What's your priorities?
Well, the priorities are outlined, and it begins with five overarching goals, which begins with establishing a presence in the community, assessing our strengths and opportunities for improvement, and then building a foundation for a strategic planning process. And so what I'll be doing is following up on those five goals through five objectives. And there are five objectives, and they range from our instructional program, the partnerships, our communications, and also the governance team, which would be the Board of Commissioners and myself. And so there are 40 actions associated with those five objectives that I will be implementing throughout the first 100 days. And also included is a illustration of the percentage of time that I'll spend with different stakeholder groups, along with some of the stakeholder groups that I'll be touching throughout the first 100 days.
When you were officially hired, you talked about wanting to listen a lot as you come in the district. What do you hope to hear, particularly from parents and grandparents?
What I want to hear from parents and grandparents is what's attractive to them in our instructional program, and if it's not there, what recommendations they may have in terms of what's attractive for them and their child and what meets their child's best need. You know, we're in a day and age where our instructional program has to be attractive to our families and meet their needs. And so, you know, I can't begin to understand that unless I spend time with the community hearing what's attractive with our programs and not just our magnet programs, but all across the district, what's working well, and then what areas of interest. And I've heard some thus far. There's a lot of interest in our CFI programs. There's a lot of interest in the arts. There's also interest in STEM programs. But there's also interest in one-to-one technology, which is something that we don't have in many of our schools across the district. And so those are just some examples of things that I've heard, but I definitely want to know what's attractive to our families.
How important is it, or how will you be getting into classrooms and observing, or is that difficult for a superintendent? Because you walk in a classroom, instantly that teacher knows, oh, the big boss is up here. I got to clean up my act. And kids aren't dumb either. They sense that you're there, and then they're going to change their act. How can you evaluate a classroom when it's you?
Well, the first thing is I always try to let the school and the staff know that I'm coming. Mm-hmm. And I always try to make sure that they understand it should be business as usual. Mm-hmm. But when I go into a classroom, I become a part of the classroom. And so if students are working on a math assignment, I sit with a student and work through that assignment and ask him or her questions about the assignment and what they've been doing, whether or not they understand it, how the teacher introduced it. Mm-hmm. And so I think when you become a part of the instructional program, when you're observing the classroom, you get a better understanding of what's going on, and you also ease the tension of having the big guy in the classroom.
I was privileged to be in a school, not one of yours, was out at Pike Township at Snacks Crossing doing something with National Coalition of Educating Black Children. It was like they were trying to get people to read the same book all over. So I was with these first graders reading the book. And I know when you're going to read to first graders, you just don't read the words. It's showtime.
It's got to be animated.
We was animated. We was rocking and rolling. But then I noticed it was like 23 students in the room, teacher and an assistant. And it was like, wait a minute now, if I'm reading this story, I'm also reading, but I'm also watching the kids looking for any sign of boredom, any sign of not on there, because I'm trying to keep them engaged. I don't want to get embarrassed. Is that what part of the difficult and tricky job of a teacher today in terms of keeping kids engaged?
Absolutely.
I did this for 20 minutes. I'm like, how could I do this all day?
Absolutely. I don't think it's new either. I mean, great teachers have found ways to be exciting and engaging for students. If you don't have students' attention, then you're not going to be able to convey the content that you need to convey. And so masterful teachers clearly understand, as we stated earlier, you have to be animated. You have to be excited. Teachers wear many hats. Mm-hmm. And they come in the classroom and they perform on a daily basis. And so keeping students engaged, masterful teachers know how to do that. But it's also hooking students in high interest areas. So you find out what's high interest to your students, and you use that to infuse that in your instructional deliveries to maintain students' interest. But you also have to have a presence in the classroom, walking around the classroom, asking probing questions, asking students the right questions to ensure that they're on track and they're following you.
And these were a bright group. I mean, they were asking questions. They were peppering. And I could tell, five, six kids. And what really got me were the young men, the young African-American first graders who were engaged in asking questions. Because usually that's not the case a lot of times in our schools.
Yeah, I found our young men to be very interested. What happens, though, a lot of time is we don't foster that interest and excitement about learning. And so you find over time that interest diminished over time because it hasn't been properly cultivated. Mm-hmm. And so the same first grader that was asking questions when they're in seventh grade are not answering those questions because we haven't continued to cultivate that level of interest in learning. But most of the students that I've encountered, they want to learn. And our kindergartners and our first graders and second graders, they come to school with lots of energy, ready to go.
Is part of the priority these next 100 days, the schools that, and obviously you've seen the ISTEP scores, looking at those schools that are not Seidner, that are not CFI, but the ones that are struggling, the quote-unquote, and I know you don't like necessarily the term DNF, but the ones where you look at the numbers and say, wait a minute, this doesn't meet my standards.
Absolutely. That's one of the things we talked about at our meeting with the Board of Commissioners on yesterday evening. There's been a focus on the work that's being done at George Washington Community High School, but we need to be focused on all of our high schools and our schools that are not achieving at the level that we expect from them. But I also said earlier, it's my expectation for all of our students to grow. And so while some of our other schools have high proficiency rates, I still want to ensure that students that are on or above grade level are growing as well at a high rate. So while I'm focused on our schools that need to make significant progress, I also want to ensure that our schools that have higher proficiency have an instructional program that's challenging our students to excel at that level as well.
We're with Dr. Lewis Farabee, the new superintendent of IPS. The lines are open, 239-1310, 239-1310, or send me an email at praiseindy.com or a text message at 85620. Keyword Amos. I'm going to try. I'm going to ask you keep your question short and to the point. Okay, because well, he wants to hear from as many as possible. The situation at Tech, are you satisfied with how the athletic director and the coach have handled that situation?
Yes, I'm very satisfied. You know, one of the things that I think we did that was very important is we went beyond what the high school association required of us in terms of corrective action to the behavior that took place on that Friday evening. And I think the coaches understand what my expectations are as it relates to their leadership, their character, and what we expect from them in terms of leading our young men. You know, they have to be the leaders on the field and in the classroom, in the building. And that just didn't exemplify what we expect from them.
239-1310. Let's start with Spencer with Superintendent Farabee. Hi, Spencer.
Yeah, how you doing?
Fine.
Yes, I had a situation that happened on Monday where over at Washington High School where there was a teacher that he said the class was unruly, and he threw some hot coffee on some students. And my son just happened to be one of them, so I went over there the next day, and the principal said that they knew about the incident because others' parents had called in, but he's still there.
Who's still there? The teacher?
Yeah.
Did the principal say that any disciplinary action was being started?
She said that what was said was that he was going to talk to the parents if they wanted to talk to him. And when I talked to the teacher myself, he said, well, you know, he knew he was wrong. He got stressed out. But like I explained to him, if my son had did it, he'd have been locked up and expelled. But nothing happened to this teacher because he was still teaching the same way.
Well, I do know because, you know, there is a union and they've got to go through a grievance procedure and a policy. You just can't, you know, they've got rights that have to be protected. But let me let the superintendent respond.
Yeah, it sounds like this is a personnel matter, so I don't want to get too public on the radio in regards to what action would be taken with the employee as a result of inappropriate actions at school. What I would say is it would be something that I'll follow up on with the principal to ensure that it's addressed properly.
And Spencer, what I want you to do, because Superintendent Farabee is still new to town, so he doesn't know that what we do in these situations is take information and then pass that back on to your office. So, Spencer, if you would hold on and give Chris off the air your name and a number where you can be reached during the day, we'll pass that on to the superintendent and somebody from his staff will follow up with you. And that was with George Washington. And allow me to go to D at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question. When they mainstream the slower students into the classroom, they didn't make any effort to accommodate them because they could not keep up. Well, I have two grandkids who are on that spectrum. And the teachers at the school have said, well, we're not going to flunk them. We don't want you to flunk them again. We want you to work with them to, you know, they're going to be slow all their life. They're not going to be capable to keep up all their life. We need something in place to help them utilize what they can. So have you, I know you're new, welcome, but would it be possible that you could look into whether they can go to a special school in Indianapolis, because they're an IPS, or whether they can have special programs in the schools for the extremely slow students?
I appreciate the call. My first response would be, you know, we have to do a great job with ensuring that we assess the needs of all of our learners and that we're pacing our instructional program as much as possible to meet their needs, and we're differentiating our instructional program to their needs as well. So it's my expectation that we can have a heterogeneous group in our class, which means we're going to have children of all levels and be able to meet their various needs. if we aren't able to, for whatever reason, then I agree we need to explore having some type of instructional program or setting that would better meet the needs of those students. So that is something that I will consider and definitely explore.
Dee, let me ask you, both of these students are on IEPs, the Individual Educational Plan?
Yes, they are.
That IEP should outline what programs and steps and plans, et cetera, the school is going to do to educate those children. If that is not in the plan, then you have the right under the law to ask for an immediate case conference. Now.
Okay.
Okay. When was the last case conference?
Parent in touch time, which is like within the last couple of weeks.
And that was not discussed at the case conference as to, okay, school, how are you going to get my kids from the beginning of this year? What's going to be the end result? What are going to be the evaluations? What are you going to do specifically to educate my child or these two children?
That was discussed, but the parents were also told, quote unquote, we're not going to funk them again.
Wait, hold it. The school said we're not going to flunk them again?
Yeah, that's what the school said. We don't want them flunked again. We want something in place. My sister taught school for 43 years, and I saw her do this with some of her students that couldn't keep up. Their educational corrections and stuff was a little bit different from the main class.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't feel like, okay, now everybody's pointing at me, I'm a dummy. They could do the work she would give them.
What schools?
And she let them do it at their pace.
What schools are these?
43.
This is 43. All right, Dee, I'm going to ask you if you would hold on and give Chris off the air your name and a number where you can be reached during the day, just because what I know of the rules of the game of special education, some rules ain't being followed. But the superintendent still knew it, so he's got to learn Indiana as opposed to North Carolina. But a lot of those rules are the same rules everywhere. But I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Thank you. 239. Is special ed one of the most tricky and difficult things schools have to implement?
It's one of many expectations for staff. You know, learners, whether they have an IEP or not, all have various needs. And so we have to be in tune to those needs. I think what's tricky about our students that have IEPs or are part of our special education programming is they are required to receive grade level instruction and are held accountable on state assessments for grade level proficiency. Mm-hmm. However, in many cases, we know that there are difficulties or challenges with their learning. And so the challenge becomes, how do you get them to grade level content and honor their pacing that they need, but at the same time ensure that they're prepared to be proficient on our state standards as well. It's a very difficult challenge for us and school districts across the nation.
Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
They kind of answered my question. I have a granddaughter who is at a charter school that's very well known. And, you know, my opinion is they are not all there cracked up to be. I had a daughter graduate from IPS and a brother, and they're doing very well. It's like, I want to know, I heard the lady say something about her kids not being able to keep up. What kind of program do you offer at IPS for children who they can keep up? My granddaughter, she's very fast. She gets done, and then she has to wait for the teacher to help 20 other students, and then she's moving. She's only seven. She's moving, and she's been expelled from this grade school, charter grade school, I know seven times since school started. And it's ridiculous, just for talking, just for moving, talking during a fire drill.
Because she's bored.
She's bored, yeah. So I want to know if IPS has a program where, and I will say she has a little behavior problem. She's hype. She's hyper, but she's advanced. She's smart. So is there a program that you have for children that are, they have a little behavior problem, but they're advanced. And we're on her. We do discipline her.
All right, let me let the superintendent respond. That's a great question.
We have a program for gifted and talented students. And you're right, a lot of times when we don't have the level of rigor that we need in our instructional program, students will get bored, and then you have behavior problems. I would project that almost 80 to 90% of behavior issues are instructionally related. Mm. Either students know the content already and choose to do other things, or they have learning challenges which prevent them from being engaged, and thus they begin to act out as a result. And so the more in tune we are to the instructional needs of our students, the better we're able to address their learning needs, which is, I keep saying, that we have to know where students are. We have to know their interests to keep them engaged. But we don't specifically have a program that is designed for students who have potential behavior challenges and are gifted as well. But the last thing I would say to this particular question is, you know, that is the challenge with us just focusing on getting students proficient on state tests. It's because oftentimes you leave the students behind that are already on grade level or above grade level.
How are her grades?
They're good. I mean, her grades from last year are good. I mean, she hasn't even been in school enough to really have been graded, because every time you turn around, this charter school is putting her out. It's like they're more focused on discipline, which I do believe in strict discipline, but I think it's a bit ridiculous. What about the academics? I mean, this is all you could do for a seven-year-old is expel her from school
I would say this, Anonymous, hold on, and if you would give Chris off the air your name and a number where you could be reached during the day, he's going to mark that, and I'll bet you somebody from IPS will call and kind of see where you live, kind of what options might be available for you in IPS, because, you know, even though count day is over with, you know, superintendent trying to get to even Steven on enrollment.
Well, I was trying not to ask the question, but I was interested.
Go ahead. Come on.
And why?
Her mother's already down. Her mother's right now trying to get her in IPS.
Okay.
But what they did, they expelled her, but they didn't tell her the her rights. I mean, they did tell her she had 10 days to have a hearing or something, but I understand if you just expel a child and no hearing, then that school still gets paid for the child for that year.
Oh, no, only for half a year.
Okay, well, half a year, but she's...
Wait a minute. What was she expelled for?
I'd rather not say on...
Did she hit someone? Did she hit or cuss somebody out?
No, she didn't.
Then if she didn't hit anybody, cuss anybody out, break a law or strike another student, or bring medicine to school or illegal drugs, I'm really beginning to wonder why somebody would be expelled.
Yeah, well, you hit the nail on the head. I'm not going to specify what she did, but yeah, she did. What she done was wrong.
Okay.
I agree, and she should be punished. But
all right. Well, hold on, Anonymous, and give Chris that information. Allow me to talk to Terry at 239-1310. Hi, Terry.
Hi. I was calling about the uniforms the kids wear. I think that's wonderful and great that they wear uniforms. They don't have to worry about what they're wearing at school. But what about the teachers? I notice when I go, they have on flip-flops, tight leggings, and low-cut dresses. Shouldn't they have a policy, a dress code also? I'll hang up and wait for the end. Listen to the answer. Thank you.
Yeah, what about teachers' dress code?
I agree. There should be professional standards for our teachers as it relates to dress.
Mm-hmm.
Because we, again, as I said earlier, when we're talking about the coaches, we set the examples. We are the adults. And so we should be representing a level of professionalism for our students and our parents and community. And so if that's a challenge, that's something that we will definitely have to explore. Because, again, as she stated, we do have standards for our students. And if our staff members don't have standards for themselves as well, then that's a conflict.
Speaking of teachers, you know, I'm sure you sat down with the association president, with IEA's president, as well as with the AFSCME men and women that represent a number of people. What's been the response in your conversations with the union leadership?
It's been positive thus far. We haven't had any formal meetings to date. However, we have had opportunity to meet and make introductions. And, you know, the arm has been extended. The hand has been extended to continue to have positive relations. And, you know, one of the challenges is pay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're just in a time where, Many of our teachers haven't had a significant increase over a long period of time, and even longer for our classified employees. However, I think we can both work together to explore some options that would potentially address those concerns. But it's been positive thus far.
When you were hired, the expectation was that the district was $30 million, $30, $35 million in the hole. And that assumed the normal enrollment decline and what have you. It seems that normal enrollment decline is not occurring this school year, that the district may only be a couple of hundred students short. Maybe the shortfall is far less than that, which would be a great victory for IPS. And then depending upon how the city council and the mayor deal with this public safety and police funding, there could be some extra blessings of dollars coming IPS's way. Is that starting to impact how you look at resources?
Definitely. A part of my entry plan includes a study of our central administration and recommendations to the Board of Commissioners on reorganizing to be more effective and efficient. And being fiscally prudent is definitely on the table as we think about any reorganization that would take place. What I've shared with the community is over 90% of our budget is in personnel and people. Mm-hmm. And so, we're not going to be able to make significant budget reductions without impacting the people in our organization. But what I've said along those lines is that we need to protect the classroom as we think about, those savings. So this process in terms of looking at our efficiencies will begin with central administration. And then recommendations will be made in terms of being more efficient, and perhaps we'll get some cost savings there.
Let me go to Lynn at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yes, I have a question. Uh-huh. I have asked my son's school to do testing to see if he has a learning disability. And what was told to me is that his scores are on track, so that they would not put him on an IEP, but he's getting F's, and he had F's last year too. So I'm just trying to see what I can do to go ahead and get him tested, or what's out there for a kid who doesn't qualify for an IEP but is still struggling.
So wait a minute. When they test him, his test grades are good on the standardized test?
Well, I can't say they're standardized tests, but it's like, okay, this is what she said to me. She said, well, when we sit down with him one-on-one, he's able to make the grades, okay? But it's when he's in a large group setting that he's not paying attention, because he does have some attention problems. So whatever testing they're doing, I don't know if it's standardized or not. I really don't know.
What grade is he in?
He's second grade.
Did any of these tests include an IQ test?
No. That has not happened. I can tell you that hasn't happened. But it's like, I really don't really know the name
that's
of the test.
But no, that's the first test they should have given.
I know, like, when they get, like, when we have his one-on-one meeting every 9 weeks or whatever it is, they said, he's struggling in reading and math.
Right.
And right now he would get an F. But when you sit down
and give him one-on-one, he's fine.
Right.
Let me let Dr. Farabee respond.
Amos is correct. The process for special education evaluation typically begins with observations of the student, some form of IQ assessment to see if there's a discrepancy between the child's performance and his or her aptitude. But one of the things I would caution you on, and I caution parents who believe that, the solution is oftentimes getting a label and having an IEP, is that students enter the special education program, rarely come out. And oftentimes it's a black hole for students. And so what I would push for is whatever modifications that you believe will come out of a result of an IEP is to first try to get those modifications in place without an IEP. Because a lot of times, you know, the labels that students have will follow them until graduation. And so, you know, my first suggestion to you would be to see if, you know, if he needs additional time or perhaps maybe he needs, you know, more one-on-one attention to try to get that done within the regular reg education setting before we go down the route of an IEP or a special education.
And Lynn, quickly, in the conversations, have you had a one-on-one with the principal?
No, not with the principal.
I think since you've met with the teacher, correct?
Yes.
Then it's time to go to the principal. That, you know, okay. You got to follow the chain of command. Everybody got a boss. Even Dr. Farabee got a boss. That's called a board. But everybody, only person that don't have a boss is God Almighty. But the other thing is, I want you to hold on and give Chris your name and a phone number where you can be reached during the day, and the superintendent's folks can kind of follow up a little bit, okay?
Okay.
All right, that'll allow me to talk to Philip at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. I'm calling because my daughter was in IPS school system, and when they got ready to take the iRead, I had been asking for evaluation on her because she was having trouble reading. They kept telling me, oh, don't worry, it'll pass. Well, iRead came around, and she failed iRead and put her in summer school to retake iRead, and after that, she failed again. And so they said that she would have to repeat the third grade. So I went in to talk to the principal, and I said, listen, she has this IEP in place, and nobody followed it during summer school. And I need some help. And the principal basically told me that IPS does not have the resources to give her a smaller class that she needed and that she was basically never going to read on the level that she needs to read on. I took her out of public school, put her in private school, and the first year that she was there, she did not do well on the iRead, but she went to summer school. The teacher came in during summer school and sat down with her and read with her, and she took it again over summer school, and she knocked it out the box. What can we do that our children are not slipping through the cracks? Because I kept asking from, like, second grade on up, you know, something's going on that she's not reading right, and they kept telling me, don't worry about it. What can we do for our children that they're not slipping through the cracks? And then when we realize that they're slipping through the cracks, we just blow them off and count them as not successful or not being able to be successful. Thank you.
That's a great question. I think, and obviously you've heard through the string of calls today, kind of what you wanted to hear. There's a lot of good in IPS, but you kind of also, you know, really wanted to hear what some of the speed bumps are.
Right. I appreciate the conversation. It helps me in terms of where we may need to go with our instructional program. It sounds like we are not addressing the instructional needs of the students when students aren't being successful. And it sounds like in this particular situation, you were raising the concern and raising the flag early on, and there was no response. And that shouldn't be the case. So perhaps we may need to explore some procedures where we have some mechanisms for family to express concern, and the school district has to document their response. Our response, from my vantage point, shouldn't be where the student's going to be okay, the student's going to be fine, you know, don't worry about it. You know, if a parent is raising a concern that a student is not experiencing success and is behind, then this needs to be some action on our end.
One and a half final questions. The letter that you wrote to students, is that something that you copied from Durham and your other places, or is that a new Farabee for Indiana?
That is Farabee for Indiana. You know, I wanted to make a connection with our students early on, my students, I should say, early on. And, you know, I was a little frustrated with the whole statute on the wait time and the review process, and it just felt like I was having to wait so long to get here and to be a part of an instructional program. But I wanted my students to know that I have a vested interest in their success and that I believe in them, and it's important for them to understand my belief in their success and belief in their talents and their skills. And from what I've seen thus far and the students that I've encountered, we have some very talented students, and we need to continue to support them and cultivate the excellence they have in them. And again, I just wanted our students to know that I was thinking about them, and it took off well. And I look forward to fulfilling some of the promises in the letter, such as being part of their extracurricular activities and being a part of their instructional program.
And if you have not, if the only time you have seen Dr. Farabee is his picture in the newspaper, or you've seen him on television, next Saturday morning, 10 o'clock, they tell me, he's going to have his classic parade wave down pat. He's going to be in the Circle City Classic Parade. And one final thing before, because I know you got to run, what can parents do to help him and teachers do their job? To help you do the job you need done?
Well, one, we need to hear from you in terms of what's working and what's not working. Oftentimes, parents don't come to the schoolhouse or communicate in terms of what's working, what's not working for that child. We need that information.
And it needs to be eyeballed, not just on the phone or email.
Exactly. Strong communication, ensuring that there are strong lines of communication between the schoolhouse and the parents is very important.
And for you, chain of command, it starts with the classroom teacher and then move. How do you want people to impact your school on the chain of command?
Chain of command is the classroom teacher. It's the school administration, which includes the assistant principal or principal. From there, we have our directors and executive directors that supervise our schools. And then we have our deputy superintendent for academics, who will be coming on board, Dr. Wanda LeGrand, on Monday, and then myself.
So that's the chain of command.
That is
so,
the chain
so it's
going
to go teacher, building administrators, principals, then the regional folk, then somebody new who we'll get to meet, was associate superintendent?
Deputy superintendent.
Deputy superintendent, and then Dr. Farabee.
Yes.
And if you can't get it there, then it goes to the school board. But y'all want to solve it before it gets there.
And one thing I will add is parents will have an opportunity to participate in a survey.
Okay.
It's my goal to have a part of my listening tour, survey opportunities, focus groups, town halls, opportunity for parents to do what we just did today, to talk about what's working well, and then how we can improve our instructional program.
He's the new superintendent of the Indianapolis Public Schools. He's Dr. Louis Farabee. Thank you very, very much. You're welcome back anytime. Guess who you are the warm-up act for?
Who?
Minority Architects.
Wow.
The National Organization of Minority Architects. They're in town. We'll find out about them. Trying to get some IPS students to be architects.
Absolutely. We have some that are interested.
There you go. We appreciate it. All that and more. It's Afternoons with Amos for a Wednesday.